This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, I am waiting for a call-in from London, and I am hoping that she will be on the line in a little while. But meanwhile, what I will do is I will go ahead, I think, and we'll play a book buzz. I want to introduce this book buzz because this is a very special one. Okay, and we're going to play that in a minute because Devon Miller created a book buzz for a very special book written by Ashanti, and I'm sure all of you know who she is. She's a great singer, and she's written a book, and I think it's a book that Devon Miller really related to because it is about the story of a name. And for Devon, whose name is spelled D-A-V-O-N, he's gone through the same experience as this author with people mispronouncing his name. So I'm so happy to go ahead and play this book buzz.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Tock Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. I just want to reiterate that my name is Devon, not Devon. Not Davion, not Davin, it's just Devon. I've heard my name be called in so many different ways throughout my life, and honestly, it sometimes feels like my name is a little hard for others to pronounce. It's good to know that I don't feel alone, however, because Grammy award-winning artist Ashanti has had the same experience. Her experience with her name was written as a story in her first published children's book called My Name is a Story. The book was illustrated by Monica Mackay. Appearing on Good Morning America to talk about the book, Ashanti mentioned that on her mother's birthday, the book shot to number one on Amazon. My Name is a Story is all about Ashanti, who feels like no one can pronounce her name right at school. With some encouragement from her mom, Ashanti learns to love her unique name. Ashanti has always wanted to write a children's book, and had the thought to write one when she got older. She used to work at a daycare center and saw the reactions of reading had on children. During story time, she noticed that children would always be engaged and intrigued. The inspiration behind the book comes from Ashanti's experience with having a unique name, where sometimes others couldn't pronounce it correctly or that her name was different from others. The book is meant to encourage kids to embrace their uniqueness, and I know so many children and families will have fun reading this unique book. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
Okay, well, I think it's a wonderful book buzz, and I'm hoping that we hear from Ashanti and that she will join us here on Joy on Paper. Again, as I said, I'm waiting for a call in from London, and this happens sometimes with calls from London, but we will hope that Ava Glass will call in pretty soon. But meanwhile, I want just to tell Big Ed in the control room, let's go ahead and play Bria Burton's most recent book buzz too, because Bria Burton is going to be on the program. Well, as a matter of fact, she's going to be a guest host on the program September 27th. She's going to come right here to the studio and take over the program for me while I'm traveling, and it's going to be a lot of fun. She is such a wonderful, wonderful author, and she has such a great voice. And the minute I remember the first time she came into the studio, I thought to myself, oh my goodness, I need to think of something to do with Bria. And then when I was doing the book buzzes and I was looking for somebody who knows sci-fi and who knows really the whole genre, I thought, well, Bria Burton was the perfect person. So she is now doing these book buzzes. And I want to just remind everyone, the reason we do these book buzzes is to remind you of books that you should not miss. We play them whenever we have an extra few minutes, like right now. I have an extra few minutes because my caller is late. But it is important that we are always reminding you of the books that you should read, because an author has a really difficult time nowadays. Well, it's never been easy, but nowadays particularly, they have this very short window of opportunity to promote a book. A book is released, and they get, you know, booked on radio shows and rarely on television, but they get sometimes reviews and articles, but it's all around their release date. And that usually lasts for a week, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks if they're lucky. But then that's over, and nobody ever talks about their book again, which is so unfortunate because there are just, you know, there are so many great books out there. And that's why I like to remind people of great books that they shouldn't miss. And here's one. Bria Burton is a really a fantastic reader of sci-fi. And so here's a book buzz from her.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2020 debut by actor Lou Diamond Phillips, The Tinderbox, Soldier of Indira. This standalone young adult novel is available in print, ebook, and audiobook. Now, let's download the book buzz. A great war rages between the invading Indirans and the Monoliths, two races divided by the Grand Schism, a cataclysmic event that tore their once shared planet in two. An Indiran soldier named Everson barely escapes as the rest of his compatriots perish and Mono claims a battle victory. Everson's identity as the Prince of Indira remains a secret as he is conscripted to retrieve a mysterious tinderbox. The seers have prophesied the downfall of their mad king when the princess weds a soldier at the rise of the Aurora constellation. The king of Mono believes the tinderbox will ensure his unimpeded reign, along with permanently imprisoning his daughter. When Everson succeeds in finding the tinderbox, he flees, aided by its high-tech and supernatural properties. Everson's journey leads him to a poor community of farmers where he recognizes how the Mad King's reign has oppressed the people. The tinderbox offers him a portal to the princess where their brief encounter heralds the start of the prophesied events. Everson will do whatever it takes to rescue the princess and restore peace, and the Mad King will move heaven and earth to stop him. Equal parts military science fiction and space opera, this genre-bending tale weaves a clever and twisty web of court intrigue paired with high-tech ingenuity and layered with echoes of Shakespearean drama. Author and actor Lou Diamond Phillips is best known for roles in television and films such as Longmire, Stargate Universe, and La Bamba. His debut novel began as an idea from his wife, Yvonne. Her artwork is embedded throughout the novel. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Okay, well, another great book that you should not miss. I don't know. I have a feeling that Ava has missed it. Oh, you know, you never know with time changes. And so, you know, I don't know. Anyway, it was going to be a great interview. Who knows? She'll probably call in at 12 o'clock today. Anyway, Ava Glass wrote this wonderful book called Alias Emma, and it is a fascinating book because it is a new big spy thriller that is really making the rounds. It's made a big noise in the business because, well, first of all, it's very well written, and the name, as I said, is Alias Emma, and it is about a James Bond style female, very strong female thriller. One of the things, of course, there's a lot of chase scenes in it. There's a lot of action. It's really an action-filled book, and I think that everyone will enjoy it. And who knows, I might get her on another day because I don't think she's going to get on today. But it is a wonderful book, and the name of it is Alias Emma by Ava Glass. And I see she's got a lot of blurbs there, including one from James Patterson. And the name of her character I like very much is Emma Make Peace. Emma Make Peace. And it is set in London. It is a British spy thriller. And I'm sure that, as I've heard, that it's already been picked up for television. So this is a debut for Ava Glass, although the author has written before in other books. But it's always exciting when you hear about a new series that comes out and it's immediately picked up, like instantly, one of those instant best-selling books, and it's picked up to be made into, I would assume, this is going to be probably a feature film. I think they're going to be trying for a James Bond-style strong woman personality with a lot of action and probably a little bit of romance in there. And anyway, it's a nice book, and it's enjoyable, and I hope that we will be able to get Emma. Well, not Emma. We'll be able to get Ava. I like that name. When you're going to make a name for yourself, I think a name like Ava Glass, that is great. That is a good name because it's easy to remember. So Ava Glass is a rising star, and well, I don't know when I will get her, because I know I'm not going to get her today, because at the bottom of the hour, I have a wonderful book, and this is really exciting for me. It's funny, it must be, it's not really football season. I guess it's the end of football season, and because I have a wonderful book I'm going to be talking to the author about. Jason Reed is a fine, fine writer, and I'm sure anybody who loves sports and particularly loves football has heard of him and has heard about his work and his writing. But he has written a great new book. It's called Rise of the Black Quarterback: What It Means for America. And I found this book so fascinating. For my listeners, you know that I don't know a heck of a lot about football. Big Ed in the control room, of course, knows all about football. And so I always make mistakes. I don't remember who's what position is what position. One of the funniest things I ever did was when I first brought my husband to America and I took him to his first baseball game, I mixed up all of the players on the field. I didn't know very much, but I did know like a running back. So when I was explaining to him, you know, this was the quarterback on first base because, yeah. Anyway, I messed it all up for him. And the people sitting behind us were like going crazy, like I was a crazy person. But I knew enough about some of the positions. And so I remember I called one of the outfielders a running back. I said, that's a running back because you're going to watch. He's going to run back right to the wall whenever somebody hits the ball over there. And so that was sort of a lot of fun. That was in the Astro in Houston. And it was great. Actually, it was my first baseball game in a big arena because I was raised in Detroit. And we had Tiger Stadium, which was just fantastic. And I lived out of the country for many years. And then when I came back, by the time I came back, there were all these big, big arenas that were mind-boggling. And so the first time when I went to the Astro Arena, I mean, I couldn't believe it. It was so enormous. But it wasn't, for me, it wasn't the Tiger Stadium, which is something that I will always hold dear to my heart because it was a place where I spent a great deal of my youth when my father would take me and we would sit behind first base. And so that was a wonderful time. And I really enjoy, I still, you know, it's funny when you are a Tigers fan or a Lions fan and you're from Detroit, you never give it up. It doesn't matter. I know. We live in hope. It reminds me of an author who's been on the program many times, Tim McGee, and he wrote a book called Worthy McGuire. And I hope you will check that book out because it is really a fine book. It is about D-Day, and it is about a sort of a gruff Detroiter, a World War II veteran who had made a promise on D-Day, and he decides to go back all the way to Normandy to see if he can keep his promise. It's a lovely book, a very charming book. And for anybody who has any family who was in D-Day, was in World War II, you will love this book. And it's by Tim McGee, and it is called Worthy McGuire. And Tim, of course, is also from Detroit. And We love to talk about how we live and hope that, well, I don't know. They are telling me that statistically it is probably impossible that the Detroit Lions will ever make it to the Super Bowl. But we live in hope. And, of course, the Tigers are doing a little bit better. But, again, it's fun when I have somebody like Tim McGee to talk to. As a matter of fact, I always keep in my car my Tigers baseball cap. Whenever I get out into a sunny day and I need a little extra coverage, I put on my Tigers hat, and I feel good because it reminds me of the wonderful, wonderful time that I spent in Tiger Stadium. And so I'm looking forward to, as I said, I don't know anything, actually. When I was reading this book, The Rise of the Black Quarterback, I realized I really know very little about football. But it's fun. That's why it's fun that I can talk to many different people about many different books. And you never know what book will really touch your heart and touch your soul or inspire you. I know that for me, now that I've read this book, I will be more interested in football. Because I'm generally speaking, not that interested in football. But when you know the stories behind the people, it's just like Joy on Paper. When you know the story behind a book, how that book came about, and something about the author so that you understand them and why they're writing and what's important to them, and they become somebody that you remember, somebody that you care about. That's why I think Joy on Paper offers so many opportunities for all of you, for both listeners and for readers, to expand your horizons, to learn. Often an author will be sort of stuck in one genre. They're writing cozy mysteries, and that's what they read, and that's what, you know, they're told, well, read more cozy mysteries. But in fact, if you're a cozy mystery writer, the cozy mystery story will come to you. What you need is to have a wider experience, to have other subjects to be draw into your cozy mystery, so that you're not sort of a one-note writer. I'm telling you, cozy mystery writers, I do recognize those of you who write the same thing over and over, and you have not expanded. You have not introduced a new idea, a new character, a new something. It's not enough to just have a different kind of murder. But to have new characters, to expand your horizons, to introduce new ideas, new people, which is part of the, you know, when you have a cozy mystery and suddenly you introduce somebody who is fostering a child. If one of your characters is fostering a child, wow, that makes an impact on people who are fostering children or who have been foster children. It makes them care about the author, and that's the important thing. I've discovered more and more as I've been doing this program, the authors whose sales increase are the authors who have reached out to their fans and who have made sure that there's something in their books that the fans discover, learn. Fans, readers love to learn something new. Whether it's a new location, a new person, a new occupation, you never know. And that's why it's so exciting to be an author, because you can create this absolutely amazing world, people it with interesting people, not the same old all the time. If you're writing a story about a village, there's always something else in the village, somebody who has a very special gift, a very special career that you can introduce, and people from different nationalities. I love to learn about people from different nationalities, diverse people, and that makes a book deeper. It enriches a book when you add new ideas, new subjects, and whether it is, of course, nowadays we're going to get, I am saying that I have gotten quite a few books, pandemic-y books, and I hope that, you know, we're over that, because actually, I have probably rejected at least 6 books where I cannot have all the characters wearing masks all the time. It just irritates me because you can't. It's just not interesting. I'm telling you, it's not interesting. So one of the things is when I do this and I read books, and I want to tell you, if you have written a book and you're not represented by an agent, I will read your book. All you have to do is send it to me, and if it fits into sort of what I do, and as I said, I love diverse books, and whether it's a memoir, whether it's a cozy mystery, a thriller, or a really hard-hitting nonfiction. I love hard-hitting nonfiction books, and I hope that you will, you know, just go ahead and make sure that you send it to me. Recently, I've had some really great books on that I want to, again, we're going to be going over them throughout the next few months. I want to remind you of books that I love, books that I think are great for you, and that's what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a little commercial break, and when I come back, I want to talk about a couple other books before my guest calls in, because I'm really excited to talk to Jason Reed about his book. So let's take some commercial breaks, and then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am just waiting for a call in from Jason Reed. And we're going to be talking about his new book, Rise of the Black Quarterback. And I hope he'll call in a few minutes. Meanwhile, I want to mention another book that recently the author was on the program. And this is a very important book for several reasons. One of the things is people will always say to me, well, how do I write? How do I start writing? And sometimes it is something in your life that changes you, something that has impacted you. And I was really so taken by a book called Flight of the Rondone, A High School Dropout Versus Big Pharma, The Fight to Save My Son's Life, by Patrick Girondi. Now, this is such a fascinating book for several reasons. Now, he did not plan to be a writer. He was just a dad who had a son who was diagnosed with a disease. And when that happened, his life changed. He had been a part-time singer. He worked in, he was a trader in Chicago in the market. He was not planning to be a writer. He had not thought about being a writer. And in fact, he had never thought in his life that one day he would be an executive, actually the owner of a medical company, a company that would solve many of the questions about gene therapy. In fact, be a leader in gene therapy. So you go from one incident in your life, one something that happens, a sick child leads you on a path that took him quite a few years. He decided to do the research. He was not going to give up on his son. And he did hundreds and hundreds of hours, thousands of hours of research. He was a high school dropout. He didn't have a high school degree. He never studied science. He never even thought about studying science. And yet, when he was faced with this great challenge of how to keep his son alive, he decided to do this research, and he decided to come out with a solution. So the name of the book is Flight of the Rondone, A High School Dropout Versus Big Pharma, The Fight to Save My Son's Life. And I hope you will get that book, because it will change your life. Because you never know when you will be faced with a problem. And I hope that Patrick's book will give you the courage to fight back, to fight for what you want, and to make sure that you don't give up and the people around you don't give up. And that, I suppose, in many ways is the story of what I'm going to be talking about in a few minutes to a really marvelous author. I am so impressed with this book, and I am so impressed with the idea of success and how you can overcome problems, because I tell you, this book is fantastic. It is by Jason Reed. It is called Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America. And I am so honored to welcome to Joy on Paper, Jason Reed. Hi, Jason.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Wow, I love this book. You know, I don't know a lot about football, but I tell you, I know a lot about writing, and you are such a fine writer.
Oh, thank you so much for the very kind words.
Well, you know, this is the miracle of being a great writer. You take a subject, and you, in this case, you're doing profiles of some really fascinating people, but you make it even more fascinating. You draw us into their lives, and you make us want to not only know more and to appreciate these people, but in many of the cases, I kept saying, why isn't this a movie? Why is this? Because you write so beautifully and cinematically.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That's very kind of you, and it really makes me feel great, because that's what I hope people will, you know, one of the big things I hope people will take from the book is that it's really about the stories of these men, of the pioneers and the contemporary players who really have accomplished so much. And, you know, they trusted me with their stories to tell them, and I hoped I did a good job with that.
Well, I think you have. It is so beautifully written. And the wonderful thing about it, you know, when sometimes a sports book will come out and people, I don't want to be sexist about it, but a lot of people will say, oh, well, this is a book for guys. But this is a book for everyone. Everyone will love these stories, will fall into sort of the, I found myself just drawn into the stories and wanting to know even more than you wrote.
Well, you know, and I hope that's a takeaway that a lot of other people will have as well, because there are so many great stories about these African American men who were once among the most marginalized players in the NFL, black men who aspired to play quarterback in the NFL, and now they're among the most influential and powerful. And I really wanted to take a deep dive into how did this 100-plus year journey happen? The NFL is more than 100 years old, and this is a story that began with the beginning of the NFL. And there just seemed to be so much there about, okay, well, how did this happen? I mean, it's not just about the players performing on the field. Other things had to happen from a societal standpoint, I thought to myself going into this book, to have this rise actually occur.
Well, for my readers who aren't aware of you, because, you know, not everybody listens to sports radio or knows what you are, but you're already very famous in the business. You already have a great background. So explain a little bit about your background and how then you got into doing this book.
Well, I was a journalism major in college. I attended University of Southern California. I was a journalism major, and my background is really mostly in newspapers. I was the Los Angeles Dodgers beat reporter for the Los Angeles Times for many years, and I then moved to Washington, D.C. to work for the Washington Post, where I covered the Washington Commanders, and I became a columnist. And then for the last, 8 years, I've been with ESPN as a senior NFL writer and NFL columnist. And my background is all in reporting. And when I set out to do this book, I do what I do in all my reporting. I, you know, act like I don't know anything about the subject matter, and I just delve in and do as many interviews as I can and talk to as many smart people as I can to try to gain an understanding of the subject matter that I'm writing about. And 75 interviews and 87,000, 88,000 words later, we have Rise of the Black Quarterback.
Well, it is a marvelous book. And let's start with the first, because I was so impressed with this story about Fritz Pollard III. I had not heard of him. And that's, you know, when a writer such as yourself is able to take a reader into the past, it's sort of like a journey in time. We go back in time and we discover this wonderful story about Fritz. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Fritz Pollard, you know, his story has been largely lost to history. Black, within the NFL, the Fritz Pollard is a widely known name, but I think to casual fans and people who aren't football fans, they really don't know about Fritz Pollard. He was the first African-American superstar in the NFL. He was the first African-American coach, and he was also the first African-American to line up at quarterback in the NFL. Now, the quarterback position back then is not as we know it today in terms of the glamour and how important it is, how central it is. It's the most important position in the sports. But Fritz Pollard was the first one, and, you know, he endured so much racism when the league was in its infancy, during the first year of the league. And he was a star college player at Brown, and then he gets to the NFL, and when the NFL is like I said, just, you know, taking its first baby steps, and he has a rivalry with Jim Thorpe, the great Native American athlete and star of the 1912 Olympics. And Jim Thorpe and Fritz Pollard are two of the first stars in the NFL. And eventually, though, Fritz Pollard and the other black players, they get cast aside. The league doesn't want them anymore. And so for many years, the story of Fritz Pollard was lost. There have been some great books about Fritz Pollard, and I was able to lean on people and talk to people and talk to members of his family. And I'm very happy to have, again, brought Fritz Pollard's story back to light for some people who may not have known about him, because he is a key figure in the history of the NFL.
And it's a fascinating story of a family that was also dedicated and really stepped forward and made, well, his father was a strong man too.
Yeah, absolutely. Fritz Pollard's it's a great story about African Americans, you know, in before the turn of the previous century and then into the previous century. And I, you know, one of the things I love was talking to Fritz Pollard III, Fritz Pollard's grandson, about his, you know, he shared stories with, about his grandfather with me that really helped me write the book because, you know, Fritz Pollard died many years ago and I couldn't interview him. So you want people who have a tie to that person when you're writing about a historical figure to tell you things about him so you can maybe shed a little light on his life. And I really appreciate Fritz Pollard III for trusting me with his grandfather's story and for taking the time with me. And you want to talk about a strong family and people who really did the things that you have to do to persevere. And just it's a great story in my field.
It is. And one of the first, it's funny, when I was reading it, I was thinking, family, having this strong family is so important. And because this family is really, they've shown such great spirit and courage, and they faced all of the horrible problems of racism, but they stayed strong and they stayed together. And I love the story of them. I was wondering if anybody's actually ever done a film about Pollard.
Well, there was a film several years back, and it was I believe the NFL Network did the film about Fritz Pollard's life. It wasn't a feature length in movie theaters film, if memory serves, but it was a kind of a documentary look at his life. And I'm not sure if there have been other documentaries done on Fritz Pollard specifically, but I do remember that one.
Well, I think you have a wonderful story here in this story. And then, so tell us now, at this point in time, looking back at the rise of the quarterback, where did it go from there? What was the sort of pathway, the next pathway?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you look at the rise of the black quarterback in the NFL, really, it's not until the late 1960s where you start to even see black quarterbacks breaking through to be starters in modern professional football. You had Marlon Briscoe with the Denver Broncos in the old AFL. He was the first starting black quarterback of the modern era in 1968. But in the late 1960s, even at that point, black men were not being permitted to play the quarterback position. He only got in because it was an emergency situation. The starter was injured. Other people weren't playing well. The team was having a bad year. But even though he performed well, the team took the job away from him because, and there's really no other way to put it, just because of pure racism. They just did not want to have a black quarterback. So from 1968, you know, we see black quarterbacks a little bit in the 1970s in terms of, you know, starting to break through on rosters a little bit. But it's really not until 1978 when Doug Williams becomes the first black quarterback drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. And Doug goes on to have success, and he eventually moves on to the Washington football team and becomes the first African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl and the Super Bowl MVP award for his myth-busting performance that day. Because until that point, the belief was in the NFL that black men just simply were not smart enough and not capable enough to play that position. So Doug shatters that myth that day. Then moving forward, Warren Moon, in the early 1990s, you know, he starts a great run, and he winds up being the first black quarterback, actually the only black quarterback enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So we really go from Fritz Pollard at the beginning of the league, you know, 1920, all the way to Marlon Briscoe in 1968, and then not really until the early 1990s is when African-American quarterbacks, like, really started to be in a position like, okay, well, now the league is more accepting of them.
Well, it's so hard to believe, you know, thinking about 1968. That was a tumultuous year. And for, you know, for Briscoe to become the MVP, you would think, you would think, I don't know, things would have changed right then and there.
Yeah, you know, 1968, I was a very tumultuous year in this nation's history, you know, in terms of assassinations and the civil rights movement. And it really, Marlon Briscoe was really just ahead of his time. You know, had he been born later, you know, if he was playing today, he probably would have been a star who had many years at the position, because the things that he did well in terms of his athleticism and throwing, they translate very well today. But he was so ahead of his time, because back in 1968, professional football in America, these teams still did not want black men at those positions. And even when they performed well, if they had an opportunity to perform, it was something that was seen as still just not accepted. I mean, a lot of these teams worried that white fans would be turned off if they saw black players playing the most important position in the field. So, yeah, you know, you would think that after Marlon Briscoe did what he did in 1968, that things would have moved a little bit faster, but we see progress often takes a very long time.
It certainly did. Of course, it was a big change from, explain that term, the tramp football player, because I had never heard that, and that was earlier. That was back in the, what, 20s?
Yeah, that was back, well, in the early 1900s. What you had was a case where athletes weren't really, many of them, I shouldn't say all, but at least some of them, were not focused really on attending school for an education. They wanted to play, and the rules in terms of going from one school to another within the NCAA and various college governing bodies, it wasn't quite as cut and dry. It wasn't quite as laid out as it is today and clear. So what you had was, you had athletes bouncing around from different schools, and I mean prominent schools, schools that would become the Ivy League in terms of the actual name of the league. And Fritz Pollard was one of those athletes. He bounced around until he finally wound up at Brown, and he found a home at Brown. But the so-called tramp athlete, he moved around a lot during those days.
Now, when you, as you said, it was a great deal of research here, because you had to go out and meet these people and get their stories. And I can see that from your writing that you got deeply involved with them.
Yes, I was very fortunate in that many people agreed to participate in the book. The pioneers, Doug Williams, Marlon Briscoe, who just recently passed away, Warren Moon, James Shaq Harris, and then among guys today, Patrick Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Randall Cunningham. I traveled to Las Vegas, and he gave me a lot. He lives in Las Vegas. He gave me a lot of time. Donovan McNabb. So you can't tell this story without the people who actually live this story. And I'm very fortunate, and I'm very appreciative of the fact that these men trusted me to tell their story.
Well, you've done a wonderful job with it. Because, as I said, I really don't know anything about football. But that's the great thing about a book like this. Now I know a lot more than I knew before, and now I'm much more interested because of your book. And I think that's a great testament to your writing, that many people who will read this just, you know, for sort of historical input and just to sort of know something about the era, they will now become football fans.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, that makes me feel great to hear that. I hope, you know, as a writer, you always hope that no matter what you write, be it a piece or a book, whatever it may be, a magazine piece, whatever, you always hope that people take away something and they learn something from it, and their lives are a bit more enriched for having experienced your words. And so you honor me with what you say, and I'm so appreciative.
Well, you've done a great job. What I love to know about their families. I love to know some of the quarterbacks that you write about really had rough some were very blessed with really strong families. They had sports in their families. They were encouraged by their families. And then some had a rougher time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, just like anybody else that comes from different walks of life, and the things that we experience make us tougher. They make us better if they don't break us. And these individuals were, many of them, they took their experiences and they overcame them in many situations, and they thrived. And, you know, the human spirit and the human will, that's what makes the best stories about how people overcome challenges and persevere. And that's one of the main things I took away from my interviews, just how physically, not just physically, but how mentally tough these individuals were and are, because you can't achieve the things they achieve without being strong.
Now, of course, I get so crazy. It's 2022, and we're still talking about racism, and we're still talking about people being rude to athletes. It's just... At some point, you know, we have to just draw the line and say, all of you people out there, this is not right. Nobody should face racism. Nobody should be called names. Nobody should be hurtful to another person of any color ever. It's hard. Sometimes I just want to cry when I hear these stories, and I'm sure even these big guys have cried sometimes by the hurtful things that have been said to them.
Oh, yeah. You know, I remember I was talking with Marlon Bristow, as I mentioned previously, was the first African-American quarterback of the modern era. And we sat down one day over lunch doing an interview, and when he talked to me about how the position was just taken away from him, despite the fact that he proved he could do it, you know, and I'll never forget, I asked him, well, how did you get over that? And he said to me, well, you're assuming that I did. And this was what, you know, 30 years, more than 30 years later, what, 40 years later? And it left a hole in him that, you know, he went on with his life and he had some struggles later in life, but he overcame them, and he retired and he was living a quiet life when he agreed to, you know, help me with this project. But there was always something that was there, this hole in him that he could not fill because of the thing that was taken away from him, simply because of the color of his skin.
It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. And I get tears in my eyes when I think, and when I read these stories, and, I mean, that's how powerful your writing is. You write these stories, and for some of them, when I got to them, and I would hear, you know, read about the how they lost out on things because of this horrible prejudice that still isn't stopping. I started crying, and I thought, you know, when you have a sports book that makes you cry, that's a darn good sports book. And
I'm so touched by your words, and I'm really my friends will tell you that I'm never at a loss for words, but I'm somewhat at a loss for words now because you've touched me so much with your words, and all I can just say is thank you.
Well, I'm crying right now because I don't want anybody. People, please stop it. Just be kind to each other, and particularly, you know, this nastiness has to stop, because there are great black quarterbacks, there are great black everything, and we just have to have this all stop. And I hope that when people read this book, it's called Rise of the Black Quarterback, What It Means for America by Jason Reed. And what it means for America is that we have to stop being nasty to each other and embrace love of each other. And I think that if people will read this book, it will touch their hearts. And not many sports books do that. And you've done that, Jason. I'm just so really honored that you were on the program today. And do you have a website where you want people to go?
Well, before I give the website information, again, thank you so much. You have touched me and honored me. People can get the book wherever books are sold: Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Target.com. And if anybody wants to follow me and my work, I'm at J Reed ESPN. And you can also follow me on ESPN.com and Anscape.com.
Well, Jason Reed, I think you are wonderful. I think you are so good. I don't know if you are in the mood to do it, but I think you should do a kid's book for each of these stories, and start with Fritz Pollard. I think a picture book for each of them would be great, and you should be the writer.
Well, again, thank you so much. I don't really know what more I can say other than I
well, because you want to honor these so young people will know about people that they should honor. And I think you've done a wonderful, wonderful job with this book. And Jason Reed, I have tears in my eyes as I finish this interview. Thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye now. It is a wonderful book. And as I said, the stories, he is such a good writer. The stories are wonderful. Please get this book, and I think it will open your eyes. It's called Rise of the Black Quarterback. It is, I tell you, it was not what I expected. I didn't expect a book that's so touching, so heartfelt, so warm, and so beautifully written. So I do hope that you will get this book. And as he said, it is available wherever books are sold, and you should definitely get it. It's not just a sports book. It is a book about life, about success, about determination, and about love, in the end about love. So do get this book, The Rise of the Black Quarterback. Anyway, everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So sit down and start writing, and then contact me, and soon, you'll be on the program. Wouldn't that be great? You could be a guest on Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, for everything, and it has been a wonderful day here, because I'm leaving here crying, but I am very happy that I'm crying over a great book. Anyway, a special call out to Carol J. Perry. Everybody, get her book 12 in her Witch City Mysteries, because she's working busily on book 13, and soon that's going to be out. So you want to read book 12. It's called Till Death, and it's available wherever books are sold. And she is a fantastic writer. You will love Witch City Mysteries. Bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.